Just because I'm a winemaker doesn't mean I have to be a critic all the time.
Oh, this is fun and it's beautiful. You do it because you love it. And if you don't love it unconditionally and stupidly, and you're not crazy passionate about it, you won't last.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar, and I'm thinking, great.
Turning sugar into alcohol is not really rocket science.
You think your car depreciates quickly. Don't hold a candle to what barrels do.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
I mean, in my youth, my first couple of vintages, the crazy part was being lucky we're alive still.
The really cool thing about wine is it swims in the stream of history and civilization and everything else.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 208. This week we feature Violet Gurgich of Gurgich Hills Estate in Napa Valley. As time moves along, we are just now seeing the second and third generation of Napa Valley winemakers coming into their own. Violet Gurgich is part of that very generation. Violet is daughter of Mike Gurgich, well known for his 1973 Chateau Montelena Chardonnay, winning the Tasting of Paris in 1976. We originally met Violet during Auction Napa Valley this year, but this time we visited Gurgich Hills Estate for a sit-down and a full-length interview. We're here in Rutherford with Violet Gurgich of Gurgich Hills Winery. How you doing?
I'm doing very well.
This is a real pleasure to be able to spend a little more time with you. We briefly spoke at the barrel auction, Napa Valley, and it was just fun to meet you after all these years. We interviewed your dad back in 2009, and gosh, you guys are epitomized the history of Napa Valley.
I think so. We have a long history with Napa Valley. In fact, my dad is one of the two vintners who made Napa Valley famous. He was the one that made the 73 Chateau Montelena Chardonnay that won the Paris Tasting of 1976. Actually, it was the highest scoring wine, so it literally did win the tasting.
That's the one that always gets talked about first.
Exactly.
Which is kind of ironic since so many people are obsessed with reds these days.
That's true. Well, I think both work very well in Napa Valley, but especially Cabernet, I think it's known for because there aren't that many great areas that produce great Cabernet, whereas there are others that produce great Chardonnay as well.
True. Growing up in the wine industry as you have, did you ever feel any kind of pressure to join the business as well as being, you know, associated with this man who truly is a legend?
Well, yes, of course. I think that's one of those questions I get asked a lot. And if I wasn't, I think I would have been a very abnormal child in Napa Valley. So, especially, you know, Croatian, for us, family is very important. Legacy is very important. The idea that you create something and then you pass it on from generation to generation. You know, my dad talks about all the Gurgiches that have come before him and hopes that all the Gurgiches that come after will be in a very long line as well, too.
And that really does bring up an interesting question. I don't know, do you have any kids or something?
I have one son.
Okay, and how old is your son?
He's 11.
Okay, so not quite ready to be making wine yet.
Well, he actually invented a winemaking machine when he was 4 years old.
Really?
He wasn't inspired by Gurgich Hills, though. My mom took him up to another winery where there was a castle, and I thought he was just going to be excited about the castle. He fell in love with the winemaking. So, yeah.
Well, I guess I chose this in his blood, right?
It is.
So do you think, I mean, you know, that's one of the most difficult things as a parent to kind of want to push your child into something, but I think there's a good possibility he might head this direction?
Oh, absolutely. I think the key is not pushing him, is making it available and interesting. And he's always been interested in science and mathematics and was, you know, at the age of 7, was really concerned that he won't be able to afford his master's in chemistry when he grows up. So he wanted to start working right away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now he's thinking about aerospace engineering and winemaking as well. So
Not bad for 11.
Yeah,
you did pretty good.
I try.
I'd be intimidated by him, actually, because he's going to put you out of a job soon enough.
Well, you know, the nice thing about a family business is that you can do anything in the family business, representing yourself, your family. And there's plenty of jobs for everyone.
Now, speaking of family business, obviously your dad is not involved as he was at one time, you know, day to day, although we just saw him a little while ago. You're working with your cousin, if I remember correctly.
Correct. My cousin, Ivo Jadamas. He came from Croatia in 1986 and with a degree in engineering and ended up eventually falling in love with wine and especially vineyards. So even though he enjoys winemaking, his real passion is in the vineyard.
Thank you for saying that name and not making me try to say it. I'm sure I would have damaged it somewhere along the way.
That's entirely okay. We're used to it.
Yeah. Can you just, between the two of you, split up your duties for me so I have a kind of an idea of what your roles are?
So Ivo is responsible for vineyards and production, and I'm responsible for operations and sales. So, but we work together on most things, and you know, it's small, and we're very involved in everything.
You pretty much have to out here. I mean, yeah, as a family business?
Absolutely. Right.
And how many cases are you producing these days?
We're producing about 70,000, which is a little less than we used to back when we bought grapes, but we've been entirely estate grown since 2003, and we're very proud of that. We have five different vineyards. This is the smallest vineyard here in 20 acres in Rutherford, and then we have Calistoga, we have Yountville, we have Old Vines there and in Calistoga. We also have Carneros, which is well known, and American Canyon, which is not as well known, but it's actually the coolest region in the appellation of Napa Valley, and it's spectacular vineyard.
What are you growing down there?
We're growing Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and a little bit of Merlot.
Overall, what are the varietals you have available?
So Chardonnay is the one we make the most of. Next is Cabernet, and then we make a Fumé Blanc, a Zinfandel, and a Merlot, and a late harvest dessert wine called Violetta.
That's right. We talked about that when we met.
That's right.
It's a beautiful name.
It's been around since 1994, and the wine itself was actually a mistake. Couldn't think of anything better to name it, so it stuck.
So how did it become a mistake?
We had a bit of bunch rot in our Chardonnay vineyard, and at the same time, we had some Riesling that was offered to us by a former grower who it was completely covered with botrytis, and he couldn't sell it. So I said, here, come take it. And my dad ended up picking and putting the bunch-rotted Chardonnay together with that beautiful botrytis-sized Riesling and came up with a spectacular wine.
Wow. Because we have a truck driving. I should mention we're right along Highway 29, so there's a little bit of background noise, as well as being out in, I guess you'd say, sort of the garden space here, the terrace?
It is. This is our patio, and we love this area. It used to be grassy, but we found it to be more practical to have beautiful stone. And so we have outside experiences here. We've got two fountains. We've got a demonstration vineyard. And the reason it's close to the highway is that my dad's always been very practical. When he built the winery, he wanted to make it the closest distance to the road to make it easier for people to get here.
Absolutely. And not only that, but you have the advantage of the train that comes by.
Exactly. Exactly. And we were the only supporters of the wine train, by far the first for a very, very long time. Shortly after they opened, they built a platform there, and we've been receiving guests from the wine train on a daily basis since that time.
Which would have been approximately when, do you remember?
95 or 96.
It's been a while now.
It's been a long time. Yeah. So we're very proud of that relationship.
Well, it's pretty cool. There was definitely an uphill battle to be able to get the train to happen here, but it does bring a certain amount of charm to the wineries.
Absolutely. We never quite understood why people had objections to it, because it brought customers. They weren't in their cars. They didn't have to park somewhere. They got to experience the beauty of Napa Valley, enjoy fabulous food, and of course, come to Gurgitch Hills and taste some of the best wines in the world.
So this whole idea of growing up in the family, was there a point you definitely decided to be in the business? Was it something you sort of were, you really want to get you into it? Sort of, I don't want to say pushed into it, but advised into it. That's a euphemism.
I suppose so. But I actually spent my life accompanying my dad to whatever winery he was working at. I remember very much Robert Mondavi Winery, because his office was in the tower, so that was exciting. Then there were many years at Chateau Montelena with a beautiful lake, a wonderful underground cellar. And here at Gurgitch Hills, I started working on the bottling line when we first opened. But I think it took many years. I definitely studied other things. I had other interests as well. I got a degree in music and kept coming back to the winery. And I think I finally realized how much I enjoyed it, because it wasn't like a job. It was like something I've always done. So it totally made sense.
Because you have always done it.
I have always done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So music, I don't remember if we touched on that when we spoke last time. What do you play?
I play, actually my main instrument is the harpsichord. Although
really?
I started with piano and flute and then accordion, which I still play every now and then because, of course, it's fun and you can play all kinds of tunes on it. Viola da gamba, recorder. So I enjoy music of all kinds, but really fell in love with the harpsichord as well.
Harpsichord. Mm-hmm. I have only met a couple of people who could play harpsichord in my life. Mm-hmm. And you say you still play?
I do.
Is
actually,
there one here somewhere?
Not here at the winery. I have one at home. We actually recently played for Festival Napa Valley, which used to be Festival del Soleil, and that was quite fun. I have a small ensemble, which includes my husband and two fellow people from Indiana University, where I got my graduate degree. So we enjoy it quite a bit.
What does your husband play?
He plays viola da gamba.
Oh, nice.
And double bass. So when I play accordion, he plays the double bass.
That's an interesting combination.
It is. He actually made his own double bass, and it's quite a spectacular instrument.
Wow. That's not easy to do.
No.
And you went to school in Indiana. Okay, now I'm really curious. How did that happen when you are California? You were born here, right?
Well, I was born here, but, you know, people go to university based on what they should study, not necessarily location. And that was my top choice for a harpsichordist that I wanted to study with. It's always been in the top three music schools in the country, and people always think Juilliard when they think number one, but that's not always at the top.
So. I was just thinking about the idea of snow versus no snow.
Oh. Well, I have to say, my very first year, it was the first time in 40 years that they shut the university down. It was minus 30 degrees. My car got covered with snow and iced in for days. And I remember taking my camera out and going and taking the most beautiful pictures. And actually, my camera ended up getting so cold that I had to go inside to warm it up. Then I went in, then I went out. At the end of the day, I found myself a little blue spot right in the middle of my forehead. I'm going, what the heck is that? Well, the cold metal from the camera had put a little spot in my forehead. It went away the next day.
Yeah,
but,
thank God.
Yeah.
That's kind of creepy.
So I actually enjoy the snow. I came, when I first went to Chicago, and it was 32 degrees in January, everybody laughed at me because I was freezing to death, and they thought it was like summer. And so when I went to Indiana, I actually experienced the same thing. After 6 months of freezing cold weather and minus degrees and 10 and, oh my gosh, 20 degrees, 30 degrees really did seem warm.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It does make a difference. It's funny how your body acclimates.
Mm-hmm. Have to say that being a Napa Valley native is a wonderful thing. And, you know, I was born as an American, but I was raised as a Croatian.
Sure.
And I always had a great appreciation for the good things about America and the good things about being Croatian.
And considering some of your dad's experiences when he was back in Croatia, my gosh, you know, he really suffered and yet was able to find a life for himself. I mean, that's on its own one heck of a story.
Right. You know, I think the poverty was not the difficult thing for him. The difficult part was war and communism. And so when he left the country, that's what he left. He wanted to escape communism because he heard in America, you could actually achieve your dreams. And he had no idea that he would be able to achieve his dreams so successfully. In fact, he just wrote a book.
We were talking about that.
I know, and it's called A Glass Full of Miracles. And it's really, you know, my dad talks about the many miracles that happened in his life, but there is that proverb that God helps those who help themselves. And I think that's very much the case. Those miracles would not have happened had he not had the passion, had he not worked so hard, had he not had that drive to succeed.
Well, and being in the, you know, being in the vineyards, being in the cellar, this is a hands-on job. This is something that you have to have a love for. It's not a casual thing by any stretch.
It's not. I think people have this fantasy that making wine is about stomping grapes eating and drinking and tasting wine all day long, and they don't realize all the other hard work that goes into it. And really, you have to love it in order to succeed at it, because it is very hard work.
Well, and in the beginning when your dad came here, he did face those, you know, while he was on the road to success, he faced some very difficult odds until he got to the point where he was able to make that wonderful wine for Chateau Mandelet and then continue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think anybody who drinks wine needs to know this story because of the idea of this man who created this wonderful winery, but also the idea of farming and working hard. You know, when you meet a farmer, they're earthy people, right?
I mean, very much. You know, for us, we are farmers. We work with dirt, with the land. And people often talk about this lifestyle of Napa Valley and the wine country lifestyle. And for us, it's not about a lifestyle. It's about our life, our values, how we live our life. And it's about being deeply engaged in the present and looking to the future and to the past, something that's very important to us, and it's not superficial at all.
Farming is anything but superficial. So what about the future? Do you have any thoughts of expanding as well as going into different varietals, different types of wines?
Actually, we are quite happy where we are. In 2003, we finally became estate grown. And pretty much the vineyards and the varietals that we planted are here to stay. You know, there's a few new ones. There was a Petit Sirah that came with our vineyard in Calistoga. My dad wasn't quite sure what to do with it, but after blending a little bit in the Zinfandel, we decided, even though we only make a few hundred cases, our wine club members would really appreciate it, and they have. So we're very consistent when it comes to the things that we do. We don't like to change a lot. We like to do the things that we do well and continue to improve those things every day, every week, every year. You know, our wines tend to be more on the subtle side, very elegant, very food friendly. And Petit Sirah was pretty darn big, so it was a different kind of wine than we imagine it to be. And after years of sitting in the barrels, our friend like, well, let's bottle it, give it a try. A year later, we tried it. It was magnificent. It was big, but it was surprisingly approachable. So because of that, we're like, you know, this is a Gergich Hills wine.
Nice. That's a good way to look at it. So as far as Mike's presence here, again, we saw him walking around before. Does he get here on a regular basis still?
He does. He does. His back is giving him a few problems, but at 93, you know, gives everybody problems, I think. So he's not here as regularly as he used to be, but he's still just as much involved. And for him, this is his passion, his life. This is what he does. And next year, we're celebrating our 40th anniversary.
Wow, congratulations. So,
thank you. Thank you. It'll be July 4th. Of 2017.
Oh, funny, the fourth, especially for a guy who came over from Croatia. It's pretty special.
Yeah, well, the idea was to celebrate independence and to celebrate his independence from communism and his independence as not just a property owner, but as a business owner. For him, that would have been the ultimate dream, to just own a small little business that he can call his own.
In the end, looking at that name on the label, I'm sure it gives you a lot of pride.
A lot of pride, yeah.
You know, the property right here is in Rutherford, and really about as central as you could possibly get in Napa Valley. For our listeners who'd like to come visit, are you by appointment? Can people just walk right up?
People can actually walk right up. We're open 9:30 to 4:30 every day. We do have appointments for tours or for other kinds of experiences, and they run for the sort of walking around tour to wonderful long-seated experiences with library wines. Those things you definitely should make an appointment for, but if you happen to show up and one is about to start and there's room, absolutely we can add you in, but best to call ahead.
What if they're visiting on the wine train? Is that it's one of a series of regular stops, or can they request going to Gergich?
People who come on the wine train, they do request to come here at Gergich Hills, and they stop here. We have about an hour here. We take everyone on a tour, try the wines. They get to leave with a glass, and usually with a lot of wine, too.
And if they would like to call, the number?
The number is 707-963-2784.
Excellent. Violet, this was nice to really take the time and sit down and get to chat a little bit with you. Thank you very much, and congratulations in advance on your 40th.
Thank you so much, Ray. We're really looking forward to it.
That's all there is to it. Unless there's anything else you want to add?
Oh, buy lots of Gergich Hills wine.
Yeah,
what
right.
else?
Learn more by visiting Gergich.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2016.